Many of us avoid the Old Testament of the Bible because it can be quite puzzling. And yet, Jesus references the Old Testament, the Bible he read, frequently in his teaching and preaching. This three-week series at Sycamore Creek will reintroduce us to the Old Testament, the Bible Jesus read, and explore how it connects to our lives today.
When I read the Sermon on the Mount, sometimes I feel like Jesus is contradicting the Old Testament. Like he's looking at it and he's saying, listen, they got it all wrong, so let me fix it for you. He says stuff like this, you have heard it said, but I say to you. It sounds like he's contradicting the Old Testament. But then he also says stuff like this, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. Many Christians, or just people in general, really struggle with how to engage the Old Testament. But today we're going to remember that the Old Testament is the Bible that Jesus read. And very specifically today, we're going to take a look at the book of Deuteronomy in the Old Testament. It's the book that Jesus quoted most often. Here's what we're going to learn today about the book of Deuteronomy. The covenant's core isn't just cold commandments, it's love. It's love. And sometimes we get like love and following rules kind of all mixed up. It's like, reminds me of a literal child. A parent says, get your foot off the table. And the child says, my foot isn't on the table, it's my leg. Today we continue in this experiment over 18 months of exploring themes found in the Sermon on the Mount. It's like a series of series. And so while we're up here on, I don't know what to call this. Is this like Mount Frandor? Let's go back and remember what we're doing in this series of series.
It's time to go deep by going up the mountain. Spend time with Jesus' most well-known teaching, the Sermon on the Mount. Over 18 months, we're covering it all in 14 series inspired by Jesus' themes and topics, everything from enemies and relationships to money and prayer. So go deep by going up the mountain with Jesus and Sycamore Creek.
All right, so we're going to focus really specifically today on Deuteronomy in the Bible Jesus read. And if you think about that name, the name really sort of frames the way that we think about what we're reading in it. Deuteronomy is Greek for second law or repetition of the law. And that's the way that we Christians usually think about it. But if you were Jewish and sitting in a Jewish synagogue, you would know this book by a different name. That name is Devarim, which in Hebrew literally means words. If you think of this book as a law or a second law or a book of words, those are going to frame very different experiences of reading the book of Deuteronomy. Now, let's go back and let's reflect just a moment. Who wrote the book of Deuteronomy? And traditionally, it's attributed to Moses. But modern day scholars, they question whether Moses actually wrote it or not. The current sort of big theory is that J.E.P.D. wrote it. Now, who is J.E.P.D.? Well, it's not one person, it's four people. And each one of those letters stands for a different editor or editorial community. The J stands for Jehovahist, and it refers to all of the places in, the first five books of the Bible where God is referred to by the name Jehovah. The E stands for Elohimist, where, the name of God is Elohim. The P stands for priestly, and there was either a priest or a community of priests who were interested in temple kinds of things, priestly kinds of things. And then the last one is D, or Deuteronomist. Say that 10 times quick. the Deuteronomist is interested in the kinds of things that you find in the book of Deuteronomy. So contemporary scholars do a kind of archaeological dig on the text, and they find different layers. They find a J layer, a P layer, an E layer, a D layer, and they try to pull all of those things apart. Other scholars have, well, they've questioned that whole thing. They've also said, no, there's like more than that. Well, I don't know what to say, but let's just call the author today of Deuteronomy, let's call him Moses. Throughout the series that we're beginning today, we're going to be helped by Philip Yancey. He's a journalist and an author who's written a lot of books, and he wrote the book that the series is based on, The Bible Jesus Read. And here's what Yancey says about the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy I chose because I love its tone of melancholy realism. While the rest of the Hebrews were itching to cross a river and enter the promised land, old man Moses took the time to reflect on the hard lessons they had learned and the harder ones they would soon face. Moses was wanting to go back and look at the roots of their religious faith, the roots of who they were as a people. And so through this series, we're going to go back to the roots of how Jesus looked at faith, how Jesus looked at who God was. And so going back to those roots, we're going to start in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, before we get into that, I've already thrown a whole bunch at you. It's been like, oh my gosh, Tom, this was so scholarly, like, and you've just begun. Well, this may be the most scholarly we get today, but let's stop, give you a chance to catch your breath and answer this question either with the person sitting next to you or put your answer in the chat. What's your view of and experience with the Old Testament in general, or Deuteronomy in particular? Or maybe more broadly, what's your experience with old religious texts? Do you love them? Do you hate them? Let's talk about it. Many of us probably see the book of Deuteronomy as a sort of outdated legal code, or if you think back to this theme of roots, it's like the roots of weeds that should be pulled up and tossed aside. We come across a passage like this in Deuteronomy and we think, what in the world? If men get into a fight with one another and the wife of one intervenes to rescue her husband from the grip of his opponent by reaching out and seizing his genitals, you shall cut off her hand. Show no pity. Okay, in all honesty, I'm kind of sympathetic to this one, but maybe it goes a little too overboard. Maybe we even see the Old Testament as showing or describing a different God. I've heard this a lot. Like, God in the Old Testament is the God of anger and wrath. And the God of the New Testament, the God of Jesus, is a God of love and mercy. You can find this in passages like this in Deuteronomy. For a fire is kindled in my anger, and it burns down to the depths of Sheol. It devours the earth and its increase, and sets on fire the foundations of the mountains. Now, this idea that the God of the Old Testament is an angry and wrathful God, and the God of the New Testament is a loving and merciful God, well, that's a false dichotomy, because you also find in the book of Deuteronomy passages that describe God's love and mercy, like this one. Because the Lord your God is a merciful God, God will neither abandon you nor destroy you. God will not forget the covenant with your ancestors that God swore to them. Jesus certainly didn't see the God of the Old Testament as an angry and wrathful God. As I mentioned before, Deuteronomy was the book that he quoted the most. It was the roots of his faith. Philip Yancey says this, "Modern readers, excited by the thrill of Exodus, paid little attention to the 400 years of misery that preceded it, or to the abysmal failures in the Sinai and in the Promised Land that succeeded it." What Philip Yancey is getting at here is that the Israelites were really focused on kind of the end destination of getting to the Promised Land, and they were ignoring the words or the warnings of Moses before they entered into it. Yancey continues, "Which is why the Bible includes Deuteronomy in the first place, and why optimistic Americans especially ought to pay it more mind." I think that what Yancey is getting at here is a question that we should often ask ourselves. Are we guilty of the same short-sightedness? Are we guilty of the same short-sightedness? We so often in our culture are so focused on the ends that we ignore the destructive means that got us there. Production and economy over the long-term viability of planet Earth. Americans' desire to ignore our failures to fully live out the democracy as we began this country as states most only allowed white men who owned property to vote. Do you know what the one state is that did allow women to vote at the beginning of our Constitution? New Jersey. That's right. Everything is legal in New Jersey. We ignore the perpetuated genocide on Native Americans so that we can get land. We enslaved Africans for the sake of the accumulation of wealth. Our individual choices to pick what's easy and quick rather than what's hard and takes time is maybe most clearly, well, symbolized in the microwave. Or a proclivity to see ourselves in a merciful light where mistakes aren't about core character traits and others' mistakes are in a light of judgment where they are representative core character failures. We pick what's easy and problematic over what's hard and just. Let's stop for a moment. Again, give you a chance to reflect. Here's a question. Turn to your neighbor, put it in the chat. Where have you seen someone or our culture as a whole take the short view and not heed warnings for what mistakes might be near? Where have you seen this in yourself? All right, here's the point that we've been trying to get to through this whole message today. I already gave it to you at the beginning, but if you take away one thing from today, here's what I want you to take away. In Deuteronomy, the covenant's core isn't just cold commandments, it's love. It's love. It's love. It's love. It's not just cold commandments, it's love. Let's unpack that a little bit as we read more through Deuteronomy. Moses says, "Now listen, today I am giving you a choice between life and death, between prosperity and disaster. For I command you this day to love the Lord your God, love the Lord your God, and to keep God's commandments, decrees, and regulations by walking in God's ways. If you do this, you will live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you and the land you are about to enter and occupy." I mean, Moses is basically saying this is about love. This is the roots. This is going down. This is about choosing life and death through love. Well, Moses continues, "But if your heart turns away and you refuse to listen, and if you are drawn away to serve and worship other gods, then I warn you now that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live a long, good life in the land you are crossing the Jordan to occupy." The heart is about your basic disposition of life, like your inner and outer disposition. And when you take all of the things, like your emotions, your love, your actions, your attitudes, your inner world, when you add all of that up, what does that all add up to? That's what your heart is. And when you add all that up, what kind of life are you living? Does it add up to a life that is prosperous and good, or does it add up to a life that is destructive? Remember, in Deuteronomy, the covenant's core isn't just cold commandments. It's love. It's love. All right, Moses continues, "Today I have given you the choice between life and death, between blessings and curses. And now I call on heaven and earth to witness the choice you make. Oh, that you would choose life so that you and your descendants might live." Do you hear the melancholy realism in Moses's when he says, oh, it's almost as if he expects us not to choose life, but instead to choose death. And maybe that's because, again, Moses has got a realism, because so often we don't choose the thing that is life-giving. We don't choose the thing that is full of love. Well, Moses continues, you can make this choice by loving the Lord your God, obeying God, and committing yourself firmly to God. This is the key to your life. And if you love and obey the Lord, you will live long in the land the Lord swore to give your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. When I read this passage in it, I see a lot more love than I see obey. It's like love, love, and then obey. Love, love, and then obey. Double love, and then obey. Because the covenant's core isn't just cold commandments, it's love. Jesus doesn't reject the book of Deuteronomy because he understands at its core is this, like, it's not just enough to follow the letter of the law. It's not just enough to be the kid that says, well, my feet aren't on the table, my legs are. Like, you're missing the inner disposition. You're missing the love. You're missing the heart. And in the Sermon on the Mount, that's what Jesus is trying to get at. He's trying to get at not just having this external, like, following of the letter of the law, but an inner transformation of love. That's the really real. That's the reign of God. That's the kingdom of God. That's the love. Philip Yancey says, God's message through Moses and later through Jesus is that rules alone do not bring about righteousness. It is the heart that must be won over. During the pandemic, I got together with one of my neighbors and had a conversation sitting outside my house. You remember when we had to sit outside, like we couldn't invite people in or meet in places inside? Well, we sat outside and we talked about what was going on in the world. And this neighbor of mine was really interested in getting people to obey the law. Obey the law, obey the rules, obey the rules. Oh, like, and as I listened to this neighbor of mine, I found myself like, well, as a pastor, I'm interested in not just following the rules, but I'm interested in heart. I'm interested in transformation of the heart. And we just were at an impasse. And at the end, she was like, why would you waste so much time on the heart? And I said, well, that's my calling. My calling is to the heart and the transformation of the heart. Because when you transform the heart, the work outlasts you. People have internalized it. And if people have internalized that love, then they don't need the rules. They just do the thing, which is loving. All right, we've been going deep into Deuteronomy, but I want to like make like where the foot meets the path and get to what do I want you to do? And what we see in the book of Deuteronomy is an emphasis over and over again on remembering. Remember, remember, remember. Remember your roots. Go down deep. Remember them. Moses says, beware that in your plenty you do not forget the Lord your God and disobey God's commands, regulations, and decrees that I am giving you today. Moses' final speech can be summed up in one word. Remember. Philip Yancey reflects on this theme in the book of Deuteronomy, saying, with the speeches in Deuteronomy, Moses established the great tradition of historical memory, a tradition his people, who became known as the Jews, have cherished ever since. Never forget. All right, so let's take a look at some practices of remembering. And the first one is this, daily reflection. Daily reflection. Take time daily to remember God's faithfulness to you. Moses says, remember how the Lord your God led you through the wilderness for these 40 years, humbling you and testing you to prove your character and to find out whether or not you would obey God's commands. All right, so what are some practices of daily reflection of remembering? Well, one of them is journaling. And sometimes it's not even just writing down things in your journal, but it's the act of going back in past journals and reading through them and seeing how your perspective on it has changed and remembering the ways that God was faithful in the past that you'd forgotten about. Another practice of daily reflection of remembering is prayer or worship or art or meditation. All of these are a way that we remember. All right, the second practice of remembering is doing a heart check. Ask yourself, am I just sort of externally conforming to what I'm supposed to do? or is my heart in it as well? And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength. What are some practices of doing a heart check? Well, one of them is accountability. Accountability, we usually think of as like, I'm going to hold you accountable. But accountability is really primarily about giving a true account of yourself. Because I can't know, I can't hold you accountable to what's inside your heart. Only you can do that. Another practice of heart check is spending time in silence and solitude. It's where you sort of clear away the clutter of everything in your life so that you can quiet down and see what's really in there. A third practice of remembering is to teach others. Deuteronomy emphasizes passing the faith on from one generation to another. And you must commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands that I am giving you today. Repeat them again and again to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you are on the road, when you're going to bed and when you're getting up. So what are the practices of teaching others? Well, one of the key practices is telling stories. And that often happens inside of art. At our Eastwood campus, we have our Performing Arts Center, Stage One, and Community Theater regularly do stories. They bring them to life on the stage. And that's an act of remembering. Another act of teaching others, a practice of remembering, is to share your testimony. Now, usually, like the way that that gets thought of in Christian circles is like, I once was in the gutter and then I met Jesus and now my life has turned around. But that's not really what I mean. I mean, if that's your story, then tell it. But it's just simply telling your story about what God has been up to in your life. And one of the ways that we do that at many of our campuses is through the practice of co-hosting. We have somebody come up on the stage and answer those questions and share something about themselves. It's a way that we teach one another. Some of the other ways that we teach others is we do Kids Creek for our kids, and we've got volunteers who are storytellers. We give our graduating second graders a Bible for the first time. We host Teen Fuel at our Potterville campus most Sunday nights. And these are all ways that we teach the next generation. We teach others. We tell stories. All right, let's go back to what the whole point of this message is. Remember, the book of Deuteronomy is about this. The covenant's core isn't just cold commandments, it's love. So here's a question to reflect on. What are the ways you already do or can begin to incorporate daily reflection, a heart check, and teaching others? Let's talk about it. What if we took Deuteronomy as seriously as Jesus did? What if we took the roots of the faith as seriously as Jesus did in the Bible that he read? Well, Philip Yancey describes how the book of Deuteronomy influenced and shaped the identity of the Israelite people and the ancient Hebrew people in significant ways. And it played a role, particularly in sort of a revival of that identity. Listen to what Yancey says. In the book of 2 Kings, while rummaging through the rubble, the high priest found the Book of the Covenant, which most likely consisted of portions of Deuteronomy. What followed was a spiritual house cleansing and revival that has few precedents in history. Imagine with me a world where people lived out not just sort of religiosity of following rules, but a real heart, a real spirit inside of the heart, going back to the roots inside of all of us. One place that we see God's heart in the book of Deuteronomy is for the ones who are like most marginalized, the ones who are at the lowest place of power. In fact, if we went back to those roots, our hearts, I think, would be attuned to them as well. For the Lord your God is the God of gods and the Lord of lords. He is the great God, the mighty and awesome God, who shows no partiality and cannot be bribed. God isn't interested in class distinctions. The core of the covenant isn't cold commandments. It's love. It's love. God ensures that orphans and widows receive justice. God wants justice, transformation, repair, a reconciliation of heart and relationships, especially those who society seems to care the least about. The covenant's core isn't just cold commandments, it's love. God shows love to the foreigners living among you and gives them food and clothing, so you too must show love to foreigners, for you yourselves were once foreigners in the land of Egypt. Here we see the heart of God, that even though God is leading the Israelites into this promised land, God has a heart for the foreigners. God has a heart for the tribes and the peoples and the nations that intermingle amongst us. And I think that's especially important in today's sort of moment in time, in today's culture, that God isn't interested so much in national boundaries. God is interested in how you treat people who you consider foreigners. Because remember, we were once all immigrants to this land as well. Unless you're a Native American, you are an immigrant to North America. The covenant's core isn't just cold commandments. It's love. It's love. Double love, then obey. And remember, practice remembering. Do daily reflection. Check your heart often. Teach others. Or as Moses says, today I have given you the choice between life and death, between blessings and curses. Now I call on heaven and earth to witness the choice you make. Oh, that you would choose life so that you and your descendants might live. What will you choose? What will you choose?